Oh, so let's begin with a working theme for the evening's festivities. Just never going to be successful at this.
My utopia won't work.
My goddamn utopic ideas just won't kick in. There goes that.
I have so many ideas about how great I can be.
Did you cancel meditation on Tuesday for the storm?
No.
Oh, good.
I have solar meditation.
Oh, you were there alone?
I was there alone.
Mm-hmm.
Me and my cushion.
Yeah, well, that's nice too.
It was actually. Half an hour. Stimulus for tonight.
Yeah.
Key.
Well, you start with you start with an impression field, the impression field, you know, left alone or by itself, without comment, commentary or narrative or, you know, willful intervention, is, you know, both the fulfillment of nirvana and, you know, an access vehicle. Now along comes the habit to apply story, language, symbols, and orientation as a superimposition on the nirvanic impression field. And that reflex habit involuntarily arising is what suggests the fiction of agency and the fiction of insufficiency, of restlessness. So what we might experience as being disappointing or unsatisfactory is based solely on the narrative and the context that one brings to the impression field. And all the negotiation that happens in the healing game, whether it's the Buddhist healing game or the Course in Miracles healing game or any healing game, is a recapitulation of the narrative, of the story told.
Not about changing the story, like to some utopic, better version or something.
Well, yeah, I mean, the healing game is, in a sense, devoted to changing the story or attempting to apply alternate meaning to, you know, the so-called events of one's life.
Or to soothe whatever it is.
Yes, the healing game is, right, largely about some form of soothing. Yeah. Which, of course, includes the promising an open heart and attracting better partners and...
Like reading a little kid bedtime stories, if you're reading them like you're reading like scary stories, and they're getting a little funny, and you're like, okay, let's go with butterflies, and then they feel better, you know, and then I go to bed.
Yes, 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 all of them. So even whatever degree of succor we may derive from participating in the healing game and making some even progress in the healing game won't work. It's not enough. You know, to be glib about it, it's not the truth. So it won't satisfy. So the seeking... you know, can persist over, you know, the greater part of a lifetime as long as we are trying to negotiate with or navigate within the myth field of the narrative at the expense of recalibrating our attention to the impression field, the nirvanic impression field. As long as you're in the healing game, and I'm not putting it down, because life hurts and can hurt, you know, a lot. So there's certainly something to be said for participating skillfully in the healing game, in the reorientation of an old, painful, limiting story to, you know, some kind of more better, elastic, opportune story. So that's cool. But it won't work. Because it's not true. You're still a product of orientation. You're still a product of imposed coordinates. To put it simply, you know, we're living in our head.
It's abstract, right?
The entire history of my life is abstraction. Whatever I could say about my present experience is abstraction. The nirvanic field, which is exactly this, is not an abstraction. But any meaning or composition assigned to it or imposed upon it, that makes it an abstraction.
Any evaluation is in the realm of abstraction.
Any and all evaluation mm-hmm. is in the realm of abstraction. Yes.
Even though the primate, you might say, has a pleasure-pain experience in the field and would move towards pleasure and away from pain, abstraction is the one thinking about the condition, scheming about perhaps how to move more towards the desirable and away from
sure.
the undesirable.
Scheming is time. Time is self. Self is impossible.
I mean, impossible to pin down.
Impossible to suffer. meaning, yeah. Meaning that, you know, dwelling as myself, a product of abstraction and narrative, I'm, you know, unhappy.
Excuse my funny posture, so I have a sore neck.
Quite all right. So the, you know, the impulse to be self-consumed and self-celebrating or self-critical or anything having to do with the abstraction of myself is a dead end of perpetual disappointment. Perpetual, you know, unsatisfactoriness, insufficiency, because it's abstract. It's not whatever it's not whatever real might imply. And whatever real implies is pretty unreal also, so.
Yeah, because implying anything is already removed from
yeah,
the field by one factor.
That's right. I mean, this, you know, the power and the formidability with which so-called present experience goes to abstraction is profound and, you know, unrelenting. Fruition, therefore, you know, in the path of yoga, progress in the path of yoga can be felt in one sense as a, you know, lessening of the reflex of self-absorption. A weaning oneself from the unrelenting pressure of abstraction, which is scheming and space and time and disappointment and projection and, you know, everything that we're so good at engaging in the, you know, the mental or emotional atmosphere. Well, that doesn't necessarily have to mean, you know, you forget to eat, but it could. You just wouldn't make an issue out of it.
That's right. It's kind of like a reverse indulgence. You know?
Yeah.
Like an ascetic that's showing everybody how they can deny themselves of something.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we're all going to benefit from that.
I don't know if I believe him. He's eating for his one meal like that. I mean, he's not a big guy. He's not like...
He's not skinny. You know? No, not skinny. He's been reminded a lot.
Spoonfuls of bacon. Grease.
Right. Yeah. So the, you know, the fun of this and the frustrating part of it is that we're not, you know, negotiating with or creating a new angle to the healing game. Yeah, there's no need to tell, you know, a story to yourself about yourself, because it's clear that it's just pure abstraction. And then to invest, you know, pridefully invest in the stories that we tell ourselves about ourselves or to anyone else, it becomes, you know, farcical.
Yes, in both directions.
Like, absolutely.
How did you become so successful? How did you become such a mess? And having an answer to either one of those.
Yeah. Yeah. Having your elevator people on demand, you know, to share with someone or a group or whomever. So you can, right, clarify and characterize who you think you are and how you think you roll, which is farcical.
It's a front, for sure, at the very least.
So what is it that's meant by, you know, the word actuality or reality? I mean, and of course they're very easy to, right, misdirect. What is the nature of present experience? If you take a moment's break, a moment's respite from naming objects, I mean, that's what actual is. Actual is whatever present experience is demonstrating, as is felt by you. Not abstracted. So in a sense, you could say capacity for attention is moving toward what's presently felt without the narrative, the explanation, the implication. You can say stuff like energy, vibration, you know, maybe you can refer to what's appearing in the visual field as texture, color, light, you know, the same thing in the auditory field or the olfactory or the field of touch. But even the subtlest of words that you may use to characterize what's appearing or occurring through the sense windows is another, right, form of narrative.
It instantly creates separation. Like, it just seeing that so much clearly. Like, anytime you're like, I see, you're assuming that you're, most of the time, the way we use that language is, there's light, you know, bouncing off my eyes, and then I see something. But that's not really
quite. No, I see. Yeah, like, I mean, oh, no. If I even tried to use the most succinct poetic or scientific or whatever, you know, language to attempt to convey what is the nature of and what is it that's appearing as present experience, I can't do it. No one can. That's odd. Because we are so reflexively full of ourselves from moment to moment, you know, as we navigate the day or navigate relationships or navigate our own imagination through the movement of abstraction, we're able to create scenarios and stories and schemes without any effort at all, even though all of it is conjured, concocted. And then naturally, or unnaturally, we become absolutely prideful and familiar with the curious manner in which we concoct reality out of nothing, according to the timbre of our persona. You know, because you're you, and I'm me, and you're you, and you're you, and you know, you're recognizable to yourself and you're recognizizable to people that, you know you, that have, you know, a delight or less than delight when you show up. You know, I mean, we're all very curiously characteristic, not just our physical appearance, but our, you know, the tone of voice, our gait, the way we enter a room, how we hang out, whether we're funny or not. And the only one thing we have in common is that nobody likes us. And so we've become very proud and enamored of ourselves, which is arbitrarily concocted out of nothing at all, based on, I don't know, nature and nurture, you know, the harmonic of, the harmonics have, however, whatever DNA is, constructs the likes of you and the reality that you seem to perceive, you know, from day to day. Pre and post ayahuasca, you know, pre and post LSD, pre and post, you know, cathartic yogic experience. So we're just for fun, obviously not for profit, just for fun, dismantling, without making a big deal about it, the arbitrary nature of the sense of persona and sense of agency that you or I or anyone possesses. It's conditioned abstraction.
Well, if the mind is an abstract factory, you know, an abstract generator, would it be of interest to occupy it with something? I mean, since it wants to constantly do what it does, it seems like. Is there a curious interest that can arise to occupy it without objective, without really... I guess there is some objective. It's like seeing that it goes down tracks over and over again, and the tracks run into dead ends more and more often, become less and less satisfying.
Well, let's hope that the A... constructive response to less and less satisfying you know, becomes a more, may I say, mature or serious consideration of, you know,
trying harder and harder.
Trying harder and harder, or the yoga of dissolution.
Yeah.
For a long time we try harder and harder at being ourselves better and better. And if we are successful, whether financially or sexually or with respect to a parking spot or whatever, we think that's great news.
You write a book.
And why not write a book, or, you know, be invited to teach at Omega or something like that. have a surefire plan and approach for nothing at all, and then, you know, sell that internationally for fun and profit.
So it's almost more beneficial in one sense if things don't work, and then we're compelled into perhaps an open availability because we're like, tried there, didn't work, been there, done that, went to the end of the road and beyond, nothing going.
When the guru says, pray for trouble, you know, he's not kidding around.
There's like a billion times more than that, like miserable-ass people, though. I mean,
there are. It's a bunch of miserable-ass people.
And they're not getting enlightened left and right, so...
No, they're not. Yeah. So that doesn't work either.
Nothing's beneficial.
Nothing's going to work.
But it could be that misery is a step closer to a possibly an openness than one who has consistently succeeded and has a prescribed formula.
Well, you know, the alchemy of present experience is very omnivorous. It will borrow from good experience and not good experience. It'll borrow from anything at all to, you could say, to reconsider what the fuck is going on. Yeah, you don't just have to, you know, use failure for leverage.
It tastes like chemicals, do you?
Really? You think that's a good...
It's a bag of great. Seasoned potato chips. What else is it going to taste like? Does this taste like chemicals to you?
All right. I'm stupid enough. I'll try it.
What flavor is it?
Does this taste like poison to you?
I'm just freaking myself out.
I don't know. I've burnt my tongue. You can continue. And I'd try. I'm not sure you're going to even taste it.
Does this taste like chemicals to you?
I mean, it tastes like the...
Oh, well, it's flavor blasted with cheddar.
It regular tastes like cheddar cheese, except, like, it was...
They always try to taste like chemicals.
No, like, even more. Like, it's like, I don't even know, like, something like this one, maybe?
It might be sometimes when you eat something first.
That's what
it tastes
like. Yeah, but I was like, why would, like, a regular, like, roasted turkey...
It tastes a little like psilocybin, I'm thinking.
Toast you on.
Well, if you don't want to...
Somebody laced your goldfish with psilocybin. Yeah. Yeah, let's eat the rest of that bag.
What do you think, Dave? It's like regular junk food, or like... It was like strong when I tasted it. If you're not like weirded out, then it's just me.
It's just you. Maybe you got like an odd one or something.
Chai is kind of...
It still tastes like that to me.
Overpowering.
Yeah, yeah. The strongest texture I get is like a pasty, floury...
It's like when I bite them, it's like there's like chemical gas trapped in them.
Oh, I might want to put that bag down.
I think I've been having that experience a lot lately. It like opens up, it feels like it opens up stuff on your tongue.
Then they ought to call them bloated fish.
Whatever air is in them, I think is what it does.
Factory air.
Well, enjoy your chemical goldfish.
Yeah.
Might as well.
Might as well. So, it's no easy task to learn how to shift your attention or whatever awareness is from abstraction to a, you know, relaxed consideration of what is the nature of present experience. You know, most humans, if that's what you want to call them, are trapped in trapped in the midst of narrative.
Yeah,
I'm sorry,
Jeff.
Quite all right. If goldfish can't interrupt a discourse,
yes,
nothing can.
Yes, I want my vitals checked daily.
That's right.
This is enlightenment, man. It's going to make you real sick. It's the best thing for you, Dave. Trust me.
That's fair.
I'll work this all out. I'm going to be miserable, and that'll be it.
Your ship's going to come in.
What's the meaning of life? Go fish.
So one aspect of, you know, fruitful inquiry, and I don't typically love the word inquiry.
Or fruitful.
Or fruitful, for that matter. Yeah. Is an educational orientation process. So that we learn how to, let's say, be sufficiently present without the nagging distraction of the imagination of our lives. I mean, really, it's quite interesting to just, you know, put the imagination of your life in a little itty-bitty shoebox and, you know, just leave it. And that's not easy to do. I mean, most people don't, you know, wouldn't even know how to make any sense of that, because we're so riddled with self-preoccupation and knowledge and stories and all the ways that we've suffered and all the ways that we are committed to suffering less.
And we generally tend to, like, imagine that we just have one life to live and it's short. There's not a lot of time. You have to, like, make the most of it, you know. So that's a lot of pressure to keep on it, you know.
There's a lot of pressure for, you know, sense or sensual satisfaction or security seeking and,
well,
yeah, all the stuff that keeps us occupied.
Temptation about any way.
And even, yeah, just the temptation is plenty.
So what happened with your account, friend Dave?
Oh.
What happened with your accountant friend?
Accountant, Anne Marie.
Last week or whatever?
Yeah. She's still online. I mean,
she went to that place that I knew. She's in a
place.
Whatever place she like didn't want to go to that much, but it's going to take a job there.
Oh, Himalayan Institute. She went for an interview. It went well, but they didn't have what she was looking for. They had a different job available, which is not appealing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not resonating right now.
Yeah.
You know, they say nature abhors a vacuum.
They say that.
So when this activity that distracts and abstracts almost knee-jerkingly is replaced by non-activity, perhaps, or non-disturbance, what flows into its place?
Well, yeah, exactly. This, here it is. This is what flows into its place. So the mind that is accustomed to narrative and the stress of narrative is already habitually engrossed in looking for objects to play with, like a cat that things. But how might this feel, just as it is, without feeding the greed response, the acquisitive, admiring, and scheming response for more story? Is it possible that present experience can be nourishing, immersive, and obliterating, which could be felt as the cessation of, right, superficial acquisition, the cessation of abstraction? Well, it's hardly a vacuum.
Imagine it's more like live streaming without a recording device.
Isn't that what you are?
In a sense.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, aren't you live streaming? Right? Without a recording device?
Well, the recording device kind of grabs a hold of peak moments and wants to kind of dwell with them. Or
not even peak. Or I mean, all throughout the ordinary day. Abstraction is running.
Yeah, it might dwell on a crash and burn, like, holy shit.
But it dwells on self-interest,
mm-hmm, right.
Ordinary self-interest incessantly. Right. It doesn't need peak experience to do so.
Right. My well-being or my experience.
I mean, you and everyone else is riddled with, you know, envy, comparison, conjecture, projection, entertainment, all day long. Not whether you're constructively occupied or not, whether you're making a living or, you know, playing free cell. Right? You are streaming, ecstatically streaming, if I can dare suggest. Already. So what we call the mind is like, well, you know, what would I do? Who would I be? How would I function if I didn't manufacture and then attend to the hell realm of abstraction? Find out. I mean, just, you know, wanting to know ahead of time by virtue of someone telling you what will happen to you is never going to satisfy anyway. Find out. Here it is. This is you, or whatever experience is, streaming in incomprehensible novelty and subtlety, immersive, obliterative profundity that wipes the habit of abstraction clean. This is the nirvanic field.
So the I reference that we keep coming back to is not really required, not really necessarily a central fixture.
You might the I reference is a, you know,
taste.
Thanks. The I reference is a myth.
But a myth we feel compelled to perpetuate.
It appears that way, that we become fond of, compelled to perpetuate the myth of abstraction as my experience. So to see that the manner in which you, I, me, anyone portrays agency and I, to see it clearly, undefendedly, is like, holy fuck, I am a ghost. All the narrative that I may bring to the table, either spoken to myself, imagined, or shared with another, is pure abstraction. It's a concoction. What's real difficult word to nail down, what's actual, a difficult word to nail down, is exactly this. This streaming novelty. Without having to be accompanied by abstraction. I mean, you can sit under a Bodhi tree, you know, and fight with Mara, fight the good fight with Mara all night. You can do it, but, you know, it's been done. Let's move on. Our, call it suffering, is the displeasure that accompanies the misunderstanding of the nirvanic field.
A sort of discomfort, because it just naturally it feels out of place, you know, in a weird.
I think anyone easily suffers from restlessness and insecurity as a product of narration, as a product of abstraction. Yeah. You know, mild anxiety at a minimum. Paralytic, right? Social phobia, when it gets more serious. So the social structures, right, of the civilization and its, the way that it, you know, so-called groups of humans have organized themselves into affinity groups. Right, whether the affinity group is gender, race, color, socioeconomic, class, political party, with or without weapons, with or without food.
Just use that anxiety. Because if you're neurotically referencing yourself, it's a lot better if you're with like people than if you're in a kind of space where you're not sure, or you're not, you know what I mean? You kind of have
yeah.
this, like, the...
That's why I feel so comfortable at Pebble Hill.
It's like why people are like family, no, you know, that's kind of like an outgassing of that basic kind of.
Yes. Yeah.
That's going to be the preferred way to hang out is like in, you know, like groups.
As the product of neurotic misunderstanding, sociopathic misunderstanding, then. Yeah, we function according to, you know, kin, groups, hierarchical structures, right? Power through knowledge, power through size, right? Power through weapons.
I only want to be associated with you if you have something for me, however that might look.
Power through, you know, belief. I'm more devoted to the master than you are, and everybody knows that. So stand down.
And give me your money.
And then give me your money. Yeah. So, you know, when we unwind the myth of the superstructure of mind, of consciousness, of narration and abstraction, and the way that that curious mechanism, you know, infiltrates the civilization, infiltrates and shapes the social groups, then, I mean, it's farcical and tragically farcical. And in most cases, the efforts made to remedy our disquietude, spiritually or otherwise, are likewise farcical because they suffer from misdiagnosis. I'm not putting it down or criticizing it, even if I refer to it as farcical. You know, this is an alchemy of an intimate alchemy of the nature of present experience, which steers of its own nature toward obliterative, immersive, non-conceptual understanding. Aren't you you without self-reference? Isn't this this without self-reference? Without the pride of I? Do we have the gall, unmitigated gall, unmitigated cojones, to rest and revel in the nirvanic field without having to prove anything, scheme or strategize, contribute to utopic enterprise? Is this enough? Now, if my mind gets in the way, if my narrative gets in the way, if the, you know, grotesqueries of my personal abstraction get in the way, you know I can find profound malnourishment. Guilt and shame start there, and guilt and shame, and more of that. Or pride, and justification, anger, resentment, rage. You know, sure, have it all. But if I can somehow discover and take refuge in, you know, Buddhist terminology, take refuge in this streaming novelty, discover what it feels like to be nourished, fascinated, illuminated in the company of present experience, as present experience, free from narration, abstraction, anything to prove to myself or anybody else. you know, to find something, either a quarrel with reality, an unsatisfactoriness, you know, Genesis and the reasons for anything at all, requires abstraction, comparison, value propositions, discernment, discrimination, objectification of present experience. And living, you know, as the product of our own imagination, is maddening. Being enrolled in the pride of getting what we want. The law of attraction, the secret, Hicks or whomever's out there that, you know, Dispenza, those guys.
Joe Dispenza.
You know, those manifesting assholes.
I always think of that guy is like sitting in front of this beautiful fireplace. He's with
a sure.
Somebody, you know, it's like, oh.
That's right. I mean,
like, yeah,
present experience is so deliciously obliterative. You can't even spell manifest. You're like, you're dumbfounded at the M. Like, M. You see?
Because you're already starting to count your eggs.
If you got something going on that smacks of, you know, physicality and, you know, so-called abundance, you're in trouble. You fucking missed the boat. If the nirvanic field doesn't level you exactly where you are, you've missed it. You have become an asshole. That doesn't mean you're not fun to hang out with or smoke pot with, you know. But you're a moron. Because you have mistaken the nirvanic field to be something that has to do with the likes of you. That's a formidable error. You know, but Bruce Lipton, you know, he's so full of himself. I mean, we all are. Why single him out? Marianne Williamson, you know, she's pretty full of herself. Why shouldn't she be? She's a Texas Jew. She has every right to be. She's an evangelical, evangelical Texas Jew selling Course in Miracles to the minions. So she has every right to be full of herself. She's earned it. You see, any time we make commentary, which I like to do, of course, on the, you know, the social milieu, the geopolitical milieu, right? The farcical madness of civilization and its date with extinction. As much fun as that is, you know, it's like, it's just an indulgence. Humans are fucked. Silly. Every one of us to the last standing, you know, man and woman and child. are appearing at the behest of the nirvanic field. There is no agency. There is no choice. The whole thing is just running as an AI program.
So you're saying that God voted for Trump?
Must have been.
I think I've asked this before, but have you ever read that book, Ishmael, by Daniel mm-hmm. Quinn?
Yeah.
What about him?
No.
Seems like a book he would like, right? He's always going on about, we're killing everybody, we're killing everything, civilization.
I don't want to read that shit. I just pluck it out of the air.
Maybe 20 years ago he would have liked it, I think.
Yeah, maybe.
Stuck in my mind.
Sure. Well, you know, if you have the slightest bit of empathy, you know, which is hard to come by, it can be very disappointing, you know, how the population explosion and the catharsis of the autocratic nation state, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, is, you know, compromising the beauty of the biosphere, right? The sustainability of destroying the capacity for joyful living.
Well, I have a book that's the counterpoint to that.
Yes.
By Stephen Pinker. It's called Enlightenment Now.
Nice.
But it refers to, like, whatever scientific revolution Enlightenment thought.
Yes.
And it just details every way in which
we're ahead of the curve.
Has become awesome in the past, you know, 300 years.
And yeah.
Like, people have, like, power and are being pulled into poverty. And,
yeah. Yes.
Child marriages and stuff like that. So.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, absolutely. No question about it.
But maybe we will all die in like 20 years.
Yeah.
But it'll be really nice at the end.
But right? Just before we go extinct, it's going to be really utopic. So hang in there. Don't take your life prematurely. Don't be a bozo.
You're thinking of the conjurer, you know, is stuck on conjuring. Like the Sorcerer's Apprentice, Mickey Mouse, you know, with the wand.
Yeah.
And holy shit, I'm in trouble now. It's just multiplied exponentially.
Oh, yeah.
And this compulsion to produce and create. Or to externalize some solution.
Yes.
Through something that is perceived.
The externalization, whether it has to do with, you know, the disappointment one might harbor toward the civilization, or even a more subtle externalization, which is, you know, me and my imagination against the world. The, you know, the samsaric impulse is there. The delusional impulse is there. I mean, you are nothing at all, ever. And so, doing something about yourself is way too much. But as long as one is, you know, suffering in the ways that's recognizable, then, yeah, what the fuck, you know, work out your shit. If you can, if you have the resources and the IQ and the intelligence and you find persons, places, events and hallucinogens that can help. But don't get too excited about the medium, you know, if you can help it. I mean, don't become a card-carrying Buddhist, because Buddhism is bullshit. Simply rest in the nirvanic field. You can kiss Buddhism goodbye. Now, of course, you know, everyone could use whatever on-ramp that they may stumble into. So use the on-ramp, you know, in a discerning, sincere, humorous manner. Why not? According to your nature. But don't become a product of the medium. Don't become, if you can help it, you know, prideful about your yoga practice or your diet or your vipassana or your command of the Course in Miracles, or the Big Book, or the Bible, or the Ramayana. don't get too prideful, if you can help it, of course, in your command over the means, practices, mediums, and purifications that you may have participated in during your life, because this is the nirvanic field. While you've been sitting in a cave, you know, on a 3-year retreat, trying to cultivate, you know, ecstatic or insightful God experience, this is the nirvanic field. Maybe you've been working at it too hard.
My mind is going to, and often does, frequently how to turn the volume down.
Mm-hmm.
From the noise of that,
yeah,
compelling activity.
That's right. You're right.
That takes us away from the
yeah.
ever present.
Yeah.
Awake.
Right.
The ever present. It's already here. Mm-hmm. It's already now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just quieting it enough to be able to let some of that in.
Yeah.
And then maybe we let. It in enough to where the self really starts to untether, I guess.
Yeah, that's right.
Less demanding.
Yes.
Of the next creation or the next.
Yes, that's right.
The next endeavor.
Uh huh.
The
yeah.
next avoidance.
Present experience is the on ramp. So one. Just like you tune, you know, a radio crystal, right, into a certain frequency, whether it's an AM or FM or other kind of frequency. You do the same thing with the, you know, call it the antenna or the receptivity of present awareness. So how do I tune present awareness to a more refined station? Now, one way to calibrate that is the contemplation of what is it that's, quote, happening, if it's happening, right about now. Because abstraction is time. Mental abstraction and narration is time. It's you know, it's a deferral mechanism. It's an avoidance mechanism. You know, the advice given along these lines is feel how this feels to feel this. Really. Feel how it feels to feel this.
This is felt.
This is felt. And that capacity to attenuate or tune in the radio crystal to how does this feel to feel this as it's being felt is a shift from abstraction and narration to the very curious nature of present experience, about which you can't really nail or pin anything down at all. So in that, you know, you could say it's a, right? It's a practice, and it can be a practice. Why not? How does it feel to feel this just about right now? And that's a textural question, not an emotional question. We're not saying, how do you feel about it? Because usually that answer is restless and avoidant. Yeah, well, you know, I am, besides my social phobias and incapacity for intimacy, I am restless and avoidant, and I can count on that 24/7, waking, dreaming, or deep sleep. So we're not asking, how do you feel about anything? Because you don't really know how you feel about anything anyway, and even if you felt that way, you'd be lying. It's a different kind of question. This is felt. You're the primacy of being, before you jump into narrative, is, what the fuck is this? So the receptors of your magical capacity for feeling tone, feeling tonality, you just inhabit those receptors. And instantly or slowly, through what could be called repetition, you discover what it feels like to feel what this feels like. And that begins to fill you. Or fill your capacity for attention. It is attention. So there's a natural weaning from the habit to narrate. You know, beauty's awfully beautiful, no question about it. But what if you could discover beauty without any reference to objects?
It's so much sweeter because it's not dependent then on the environment or your behavior, any kind of environmental conditions. So it's like, oh, that's kind of nice.
That's kind of nice. Beauty is completely autonomous. Yeah, it's not dependent on objects, subjects, activity, or anything that might appear in the sense windows. It's the collapse of, you know, any kind of dependency. Yeah, if you want to skip a few meals, okay.
I know.
I'm guessing that was a hot topic on
Tuesday. Not really, no. We're just teasing.
It's a poke.
It was a little poke, yeah.
Let go a lot of
people attend. No, not too many, but enough to make it, you know, interesting to a point. And I sure as fuck don't need to do it again.
How about life?
Well, I, you know,
sucks the weather. Have Alan and Mike in person. But.
Yeah, I was wondering if live would.
I know that he'd be happy to meet, and if the weather's nice, we can set it up and go. I mean,
even
yeah.
worse, because he's so soft-spoken. I still, even on my computer, I was like, should I put on headphones? So if you're in, like, a Cheesecake yeah. Factory or something.
No, I think I have to get in his clothes.
I know. Do I have to inhabit you to hear what you're saying?
You must flourish.
I know.
Yeah.
I just like asked him to like speak up a little bit.
No, we tried. He just—it's just he's not very even his work. It's very like mumbly, like monotone. There's not a lot of so it's just kind of
yeah. Enlightened monotony.
Seems to be a thing with those enlightened people.
It's a thing, man.
Monotone.
Unless, of course, you're traveling lighter.
Oh, yeah.
Then it's very exciting.
Except for that guy. He's got lots of range.
Does. He's got broader range. Understandably, whatever mind is, loves mind. That right restlessness and abstraction and engagement and narration and the meaning of things and the value associations given and the belief and the superstition and the certainty, it loves itself. And it finds it, one can find it very challenging to replace mind with presence or texture. So in that, in that respect, it's good to have a salon, to go to so that you can groove. Groove on the nature of present experience and explore that. Get accustomed. Get accustomed to nirvana, baby step at a time. It doesn't have to be a fitful, heroic, cathartic, overly demonstrative thing. It can be chill. You begin to understand what the implication of the nirvanic field is, that it is exactly at hand, that there's nothing but the nirvanic field. And you slowly lose interest in the momentum of narration and abstraction and find nourishment sipping from the nirvanic field. We can be so results-driven and, utopic impulses is results, right? Results-driven. That once this happens and that happens and this happens and that happens and I change from within and all of these, right, prerequisites for some kind of future satisfaction. What if that whole thing were to drop away? You were no longer the product of present experience, past experience, or the anticipation of future experience. You go out to the barn, you unlock the door, and you tell all the unicorns, "You're free."
My must have really been something about his goldfish.
I tell you, man, the goldfish tonight were awesome.
Beth said she watched, I think it's called Wild Wild Country.
Is that with OSHA, right?
Yeah.
I watched it and didn't know who it was, and then she sent that thing out. I'm like, I think this is the same wacko that I just watched on the thing. I didn't finish it.
Is that a documentary?
Yeah, or it's like a part of the TV, like dramatization?
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird.
I don't watch. Is it good?
Well,
It has a certain fascinating quality to it. Unfortunately, you know, too much of it was about, Sheila, who was Bhagwan's secretary, and in his silence and disinterest in appearing publicly, she became the, you know, the voice and the narrator and the power behind the unfolding of their ashram and community experience. So,
no, I missed. I always like, because it wasn't that. It was hard to sit still to watch that damn thing. But
yeah.
I missed, like, there was. They built like a giant city in his honor of sorts, right? But he had disappeared. Did he come back when they built that, or they built that? That was
he was
his
there.
Instruction.
He was there.
That was his instruction.
For most of the time, he was there.
Was it initiated by him?
Or yes.
Did they start. Okay.
Yeah.
That was weird.
Yeah, I mean, because he was so outspoken, in a really endearing way. If like us, you're a, you enjoy aversive personality disorder. He appealed to the aversives because he was so radical, within, right, the orthodoxy of India. So they needed to find... They thought they needed to find another place to live because he was attracting too much contention.
Yeah,
and someone threw
it,
you know.
Walking around wearing the same colored robes.
Well, it was kind of stupid,
yeah,
too, to do the whole.
Come on.
Do that whole fucking thing with the red and the red robes and stuff. Yeah.
Where's some regular clothes?
It just didn't seem, you know, all that necessary. But anyway. So yeah, there was a woman that was going to look for property in India, and there was a woman that was, Sheila was empowered to go look for property in America. So she found this farm in Oregon and thought, oh, we could, we could just build a community of 50,000 people here. But
50,000 people?
Oh, it was
they
a town.
Built, like,
dude,
malls and shit. And
you need to watch it. I mean, it's really fascinating.
They built like a whole
but town. But the land, the 600 something thousand acres, was zoned for ranching with a minimal of ranch related buildings. And they built a city.
Like, what they did was impressive in terms of like the amount of like shit we can get done in a day. Like, they like didn't take breaks. They were like dedicated psychopaths.
They were all constructive psychopaths.
They built like cool, like, you know, I don't know, looked like good stuff, you know.
They built great stuff.
We could barely put our heads together. We're like,
I can't even finish a bag of goldfish.
I know.
Oh.
Yeah, I have to watch it. I'll have to watch the crown.
It's hard to see. I'd be real tired or something. I don't know.
So the emphasis was
maybe while you're working.
The emphasis was way too much. Because that's the footage and that was the drama field that they had, on the post-India experience, which was the purchase of the land and the development of Antelope, Oregon, into a city of 50,000 sannyasins with huge amounts of money and productivity. And all of the political haranguing that they got involved in to live their lifestyle.
That's kind of the biggest cult ever, right? 50,000? Like, active? Like, really in a community? Like...
Well, it was formidable.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so all of the, you know, politics and violence and nefarious deeds that came out of the vicious tendencies of Sheila were portrayed, you know, with some, I would say, some care. But then that, so the emphasis really was on the drama field of the Osho community, and perhaps a little too much emphasis on them being considered, you know, sexually promiscuous, which they were. But, I don't think that was half of it. You didn't really get a chance to get into the lovely, cathartic, humorous nature of his body of teaching.
Well, that's what, like, I didn't make it to the end. I was like, so was he like another just pervy, crazy person? Or was there something there? Or I didn't get any of it.
He was very intelligent and very, very funny and very hypnotic. And so there's a lot of, you know, call it excellent material woven into his body of work, which you don't get hardly any access to through this 6.5-hour thing.
Yeah. The Mustard Seed's a pretty good book. Got some juicy elements in there.
Yeah. He was provocative and juicy, and he was, you know, he was ahead of his time, really, in many respects. But he wasn't mature enough to understand how to negotiate and navigate
50,000 people off your ass.
But no easy task. And the fact that, you know, he amassed 20-some-odd Rolls Royces and other crazy indulgences. And, yeah, I mean, you know.
As soon as there's a personality in the center of the movement.
Right.
There's an inherent contradiction.
Yeah.
And you have people that want to be that center.
Well.
In their own world. You know.
Well, see, there's the very impulse that we're talking about at a very personal level. Of, you know, personal suffering, irritability, restlessness, and abstraction, validation, right, and getting things done, just exploded
right
throughout this community.
Exponentially
so, where the, if I can be so bold, you know, the real yoga is, dude, chill the fuck out in the nirvanic field, rather than amplify, you know, this restlessness and delusional tendency, you know, across a utopic, right, landscape.
And all it does is whip everybody else, because they were drawing attention everywhere they went. It was immediately everyone was like, what the fuck's going on there? You know, it was like...
Well, I don't think Sheila really had good instruction as concerns the nuanced nature of self-realization. And I don't think, you know, Bhagwan in his day was very mature in handing out constructive instruction in the nuanced nature of self-realization. He was messianic. I mean, he had his foibles, and it was his power, which was he was just born with. You know, his astrological chart was like, this guy's trouble, man. He's an amplifier. So he was born to be an amplifier, and rather than amplifying the simplicity of, you know, nirvanic wading, as would one might wade in a pool, his amplification was, right?
Drama.
It was drama. It was a drama field, an ecstatic, you know, drama field.
One of his devotees who didn't get caught up in the messianic aspect.
Yeah.
Regarding the sexual aspect of it is.
Yeah.
And the reason behind it was, do it till you're tired of it, and then let's talk, and let's get down to it.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's why they don't teach Kabbalah until you're in your 50s, mm-hmm. You know, traditionally, right?
I started early, so.
Yeah, you started early.
Because, you know, the other end of the spectrum is the Brahmacharya. It's like, hey, chill out on that, and, you know, find it by channeling all that energy up. It's like, good luck.
Well, again, you see what happens. What happens is we become overly engaged in the process, right?
Right.
In the tools, in the abstraction of, you know, spiritual purification. Mm-hmm. You're like, okay, everyone's lit, everyone's fucked up. I mean, yeah, just relax on that. If you need to have sex or and are lucky enough to have it, hopefully with, you know, a consenting partner, then please
yeah.
enjoy yourself. I mean, really, enjoy yourself, enjoy yourself, enjoy yourself. You can't say it enough, you know, enjoy yourself. And if, you know, you come back around to wanting to sip from the nirvanic field, okay, well then let's, you know, we'll chill out and do that. It's the salon
both.
Approach.
Like, you don't have to or have both. One or the other. You know,
that's
that
right. They're
like,
not.
Oh shit!
They're
I
not mutually exclusive.
Enjoy, you know, to some extent, whatever bizarre yeah. persona appears to be.
If you
want to
eat
up.
Meat, you know, smoke some ganja ceremonially or otherwise, and sip from their nirvanic field. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Don't emphasize a thing as contrasted with not a thing. Because that then you be, then this energy of abstraction becomes consumed with to be more distraction.
I saw how frustrating one guru got when the householders would come and say, "Occupied, I waited for the full moon to have sex with my wife, but just couldn't wait. Will you please, you know, take care of that yourself?" You get tired after a while of them confessing publicly.
Well, yeah, that's just it.
Their impulses, and it's like, you guys grow up.
Grow up. Right.
But he was trapped in this dynamic of the children's mentality and the father that guides.
Well, guess who did that?
It's kind of written in the Vedas in a way.
All right. So if he signed up, you know,
yeah,
for to be a Vedic guru, you're in trouble.
Yeah, Amrit Desai fell into that too.
Amrit Desai, yeah, of course.
He couldn't extricate himself from it. He tried.
No.
Oops, stuck. Oops, I'm caught.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, you see, right, the mind loves the mind. Sensuality loves sensuality. The restlessness of becoming and justification loves the restlessness of becoming and justification, and it loops in on itself. And loses sight of the, you know, this simplicity of the present nirvanic field.
That's the irony of it. You have this mind that can be incredibly complex.
Yes.
And then you have behind it all, this field is incredibly available and simple.
Yes.
But the mind just has to make some intricate design out of it over and over again.
Absolutely.
And create this maze, like, yes, we have the key to the maze.
Yeah.
And the walls are high and the turns are somewhat treacherous.
Well, they can be.
But if you follow, it's the right way. When in fact it's all, I don't know, maybe it comes into being for us to then find that it's not really what it appears to be. Over and over again, like, enamored, taken, maybe even compulsed by more or avoidance of, to, oh, shit, I did it again. It's really not that important. Oh, shit, I'm not really that important.
Yes.
The eye that's built up into this, myth.
Yeah. The maturing process, call it that. Of, you know, the infant to the adult, or, you know, the adult as a indulger in the mystery of the world, to the adult that begins to sip from the nirvanic field, right? Just does itself. It's a natural arc of renunciation.
So if we effort like crazy or don't effort at all, we're still going to come back around. Yeah. but relaxing into that, really trusting, leaning into it, as you would say,
yeah,
is easier said than done when you're really attached to some, hey, this has got to be some effort to have some reward.
Well, that's right. I mean, that's why, you know, this salon is not, you know, loaded with folks, because most folks, if they're, you know, even marginally, call it spiritually interested, will go to cosmology and go to kinship and go to practice and go to
workshop.
Yeah, because, you know, that's real. Yeah, it's not easy to sip from their nirvanic field and, you know, be relieved of the accoutrement of self. It's like, you know, somehow you got to be kind of just ready to pop in on there and, you know, chill the fuck out. You know, anyone looks at all the spiritual progress they've made as a result, excuse me, of all the spiritual shit that they've done, you know, the honest answer is I have not made any progress at all, and I'm still absolutely empty-handed. Because you're still reliant on the myth of a field of abstraction as the arbiter of, you know, your spiritual progress or success.
Right, so the first lie is that little point on the map that says you are here.
Oh, yeah.
And then the other point on the map says destination.
Coordinates. If you're the product of coordinates, if you're the product of sensuality, yeah, you're going to be confused. Which is cool.
Right, and not to even fuss over the fact that that will arise necessarily.
Yeah, leave it alone.
Not fuss, but you are fussing.
Well, whatever you do, you're going to do. You've never been able to, and I'm not singling you out, I've never been able to outsmart myself. Mm-hmm. I've given myself a lot of advice over the course of the, you know, years I've lived, and I don't think I've ever followed it. Not once. Everything appears by, you know, impulse. It has nothing to do with the sticky notes on my fridge or the justifications that I've invested in as to why I should be or do a certain thing. I'm like, I'm being played. I'm not alone. We can work on your neck after we close the computer down.
Oh, I'm still here. What time is it, by the way?
It's 2 a.m. This has been the most fun. I haven't done this little, and I can't remember how long.
It's
9:30.
Wow. Usually I get a little bit of urge to go.
Yeah.
You mean at Panera tomorrow?
Panera, yeah. Uh-huh.
Is there snow or something tomorrow?
More snow? Yeah. I hope not. Jesus.
Saturday I might go to the Easton Public Market and hang out.
There's whoa.
There's going to be that DJ guy there again or something.
Nice.
No, but there's
let's get
pizza
some vape
made,
wax.
There's pizza made from scratch. There's all different, like, you know, it's a little indoor market with all a bunch of local people making really good food.
Sunday rants, no, that's it.
Some foodie thing.
It's a foodie thing.
Yay.
I know Easton's on the way for everyone.
You know, I can see the, you know, the reflex in my own quiet moments where what you call mind, I would call mind, is avoidant by nature and wants to run and play with abstraction and, you know, story and extract feeling tones, whether pleasant or unpleasant, emotional response or bracing response, out of the right story that's being suggested. And it's like, you again? Really? So the response to it from time to time, not as a practice or a commitment of any kind, is just to recalibrate, right, to what actuality is, which is really, sensate, textural reality. And then the habit or reflex of mind to go off and running, right, into 1,000 diffuse storylines, capillary storylines.
Now I just actually might smite that half a J on my own.
And there you go. On your own. Not with us around.
I found another one, Jeff. It might have been one you gave me a year ago.
Well, if you've got some, then...
I have a whole one that I haven't touched or there's a half of one that I just found.
Stuff. Just give it to me. This is so dumb. When he gives it to you, give it to
you. Yeah, just remember that. Someone gives you something, just give it to friends.
I'm waiting for the moment. The moment never comes.
The moment never comes. The moment's tonight.
I think it's tonight.
We'll set the moment for you tonight.
Me and my neck.
We'll work on your neck, give it some relief, and then we'll get
When I was upside down, I wanted to walk on this tile.
How are you guys different than a stoner cult? No, I got nothing.
Boy.
Wish I had something to that.
It's funny because, like, maybe the less that my mind has to say, it's just becoming so apparently ridiculously repetitive.
Mm.
Like, it's trippy. It's like, oh, my God. It's spontaneous, it's not scripted, but it's repetitive still. It's really funny. It's like, I just don't have, I just randomly come up with the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
Number 9.
That whole sobriety thing that Paul Hederman sells, I don't know about that.
Yeah, he does. He's true to the 12-steppers.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a beautiful thing, of course. But,
definitely. 12% of the people that work on.
12%? That's not bad, huh? I mean, 12% success rate for AA?
Mushrooms is like one dose of smoking cigarettes, 80%.
Mushrooms is 80%?
Psilocybin.
Wow. Psilocybin is
one study and only for cigarettes, but it probably works for
me. Most likely, yeah.
You might as well just go down to Johns Hopkins. They'll give you some psilocybin for a study.
Do with a group, right?
Psilocybin?
Yeah.
Well, they do it like in a medicinal setting.
You can go down to Johns Hopkins and sign up. They actually have one. They were looking for meditators, long-term meditators. You could do this. You can email the guy. Go on Johns Hopkins. Yeah. And
shit.
He's looking. You might have to, finagle your story a little, because he's looking for specific.
Yes, I do every day.
Because it's scientific. Yeah, every day for now. Just say you do. Whatever. You're fine. And then you can go down there and no, but it's weird. Like, they're going to give you high dose psilocybin in, like, a room. And kind of, you have, like, a babysitter, whatever. But they want to, study.
A high dose, well.
What you do is pretend to go crazy at the beginning. Freak them out. Start screaming. I'm just fucking with you guys.
They want to see if it, enhances your meditation.
Indulge me the permission to make a few closing comments apropos of some of the...
There's still people on there that whole time?
Well, some people are typing in the chat room and stuff.
Sorry,
guys.
Yeah, they're
going out.
I thought it was
off.
Like you turned that off a while ago.
They're into the shrooms.
I don't know. Listen, when you get high on the internet, people are like, hey, those guys are getting high. Let's check that out. there's a seduction when it comes to being, clever, especially from a, so-called Advaita or non-duality bent, which is the sometimes clever refusal of, existence or reality or it's all a dream and, all that kind of stuff. And it's easy to get you know, a little caught in the seduction of having, let's say, the final word. You know, just feel this. You don't have to become, you know, clever or argumentative or discover a more refined conclusion than the next person. This speaks for itself. And as one, you know, kind of chills out and hangs out with this nirvanic field, then, you know, it's like everything is welcome. And there's no emphasis that needs to be placed on having, you know, an accurate conclusion about anything. This is good, man. This is nice.
That's right. No destination, no prescribed destination.
I don't have to, you know, I don't have to reference the self or the not self or the person or the not person. I don't have to reference experience as being one thing or not a thing or to whom it occurs. All of that becomes quite superficial. It's just fodder for the arguer in me, right? The aversive arguer in me.
And it's so much more, I can't say that word, equal,
Egalitarian.
I don't know why I can't get to say that word. Anyway, it's so much more open in the, and playful in the other way and inclusive.
Yeah. I like, you know, open and inclusive. I don't have to have
not playful. Just skip that part.
Playful's good. Playful's nice.
Yeah.
You know, men more than women, at least in my reading of, you know, chat rooms and people that have discourse, you know, testosterone-driven territory and argumentation and pissing matches and getting it right is a much more common narrative for, you know, men involved in this stuff than for women involved in this stuff. And
even that is funny. Like, when I was telling the older guy about this group and whatever, he's like, is it mostly women? And I was like, well, more so, but right now it's all men and me. So it's like, you can never really, you know, it's random and it depends on...
mixed bag.
Yeah.
And I mean...
But yeah, men in our society are much more trained to...
I think so.
Know something, support, you know, be... It's dominant. Sure. It's the dominant.
Yes, it is. I
declare.
Find it kind of relaxing that, you know, not to have to be, declarative.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Oh, that was that. Hey, everyone. It's way past our bedtime. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. I hope it was at least entertaining in some small way. And thanks for being so active on the chat room and entertaining each other. We'll see you at the next one.
What were they chatting about?
Is it comment driven? Is it driven by the...
anything good?
Content?
You had me at toppling the patriarchy. Right. I'll have some crack on mine, please. I don't think they were paying attention. They were just having fun, That's right, just having fun.
Background noise and people talking.
Yeah. If there's no person, who's ordering the pizza? Thanks.
Well, there you go. That's related.